Australia Remembers, tape number 8. This tape was recorded at Tooradin with people from the area of Tooradin and Coorirup. It was recorded on the 12th of September, 1995.
We on? Yeah. My name's Dick Florence, and I originally come from Bensdale and came down to Pakenham, and then the war came on and decided to come over in the protective industry to the flax, Coorirup, and which we put on the flax. Now probably a lot of you wouldn't know what flax, how it originated, but it was brought in by on the railway, and then it was distributed into the paddocks, and was laid out in rows. And of course, not having enough members of Coorirup to do the work, the land army was brought into it, and which we're very grateful at the time. So our job was to sort of help them out, and they were a wonderful lot of girls, and they were helping us. They used to have a gang of their own. They had their own matrons that looked after them, and they had their camp where our yards of the PMG, or telecom as we know it now, and so that's really what brought me to Coorirup, was to help out in this way. And the flax was, after a period of time, 3 to 4 weeks, I had a turning team which had sticks. We used to go along and turn it over just like a sheaf of hay, and then it was brought into the factory and put through the scutching machines. And of course the land army girls helped out there a lot, and the flax that we brought in was used for webbing and other things that the soldiers had. And so I think that's probably enough for me, so I'll pass on to the next one.
So was the flax actually grown here, or
was it wasn't grown here. Mm-hmm. There was a few tried, but it wasn't a lot. We did have flax, yes, we did have, but not a lot. We used to import it in the other dry areas.
So where was it coming from?
Well, I think Colac was our main issue where they used to bring it through.
And would they build a factory at Coorirup?
The factory was built here, yes.
What year was that?
Oh, that'd be about 43, 40, 41, 42. And this is where the protective industry came into it. They had a lot of people that couldn't go to the war. And so it was put into that.
How big was the factory?
Oh, well, it's up there now, I think. It's got the...
Where the printing is.
Where the printing office is. Oh, quite a large area, factory. We used to employ around about, when on night shift, we'd have around about 50 to 60 in there. But our main worries there was the dust that came off. There was no such thing as masks or anything. Don't know how long, where we've come to live so long with the dust that was put out.
Was it very thick, was it?
Very thick.
In what part of the process?
Oh, and that was when they went through the scutching machine. It was, you sorted it on a bench, and it went into the scutching machine and went over a belt, just like a sheaf of hay, come out the other end, just like hair, like silk. Have you ever seen flax? Came out, and then we had what we call the graders. We had a chappy taking it off, laying it on our table. We used to grade it, and then roll it and put it in boxes, which was sent away then to be. We sort of graded what they call a weft and a warp. There was two grades that we had, and the colour. So that's really what happened.
So we had about 50 girls working on the flax, and I'd say 30 would be Land Army girls, and the rest would be local girls. and but we worked together and we got on very well together, and we liked it. I mean, it was hard work for us, but still, everybody else had to do something. And they made parachute out of the two, and as Dick said, linseed oil, but it was interesting. And because we, you know, worked from when it went out in the paddocks and then till we saw the finished article, or finished the fibre. And when, as Dick was saying, when it went through the machines, well, all the shives, they went underneath and they had big horse and lorries and all they were virtually carts with sides on. And they used to take it away and put it in, or they'd fill up any tips or water holes, you know, what wanted filling in that. It all came into being useful, you know, even the other things like the shives and that they could use then.
How long would you work? How long was the day?
8 hours a day. 8 hours. When we were working inside, we had three shifts, didn't we? It was three. We could start at, say, 8 in the morning and go right through the night. And you just alternate. You'd be on day shift, afternoon shift, and then night shift. And it was, you know, sometimes it was very cold, sometimes it was hot, and as Dick said, very dusty. But it was quite good.
So the need for it was that important that they'd run continuous.
That's right, yes. Had to run 24 hours a day. So
was it very tiring, very hard work?
Oh, well, we were on our feet all the time. You didn't sit down.
It was hard on the back.
Yes, it was definitely hard on the back too, and the legs.
You had to spread it on the ground.
And then when you picked it up out and you tied it into sheaves, you had hay band, didn't you? We had big bundles of it here tied onto us, and then you just pull one out, and when you got to the sheaves were big enough, you'd just tie them up, then leave them there, and another lot of men would come along and put them on the truck and then take them into the what we call the flax mill, the factory.
Brilliant stuff.
So what did it look like at the end of the process? Was it sort of a thread by the time? It
looked virtually more like just like silky hair. This is about the best I could say, yeah. It just came out as if the straw sort of would taken off it, of course, and that's when it went into the shafts, and it just sort of came out like pliable, very soft, and just like, yes, as if it was like hair.
And like that, you'd put it on the trains or send it away, would you?
Put it into being what they do with the wool bars. Press it, put it under a press, and then dry a big section of it. It's just like human hair.
And where would it go off to then, to the mills?
Down to Melbourne and be made up into webbing, belts, and gaiters, whatever it was.
I think that's about all I can do.
Doesn't much,
was it?
Okay.
Got the idea.
Go on, still on. Just tell them what you said.
I don't know what I was going to say.
Can we just say about the girls, how long they were? We'll now say about how that was. I'm getting on to the flax again. Was asked the question, what happened after we left it out in the paddocks? Well, then, of course, we went along and we made bundles out of much as we could pick up and tied it with a certain knot that we could easily undo. And this process went on until the paddock was finished. And then the trucks would come along and they would pick up the flax bales or sheaves and throw them in, and then they would make hay stacks out of them or flax stacks, and then when the wet came in, everything was taken into to the factory, and then the processing of the flax took place.
Well. This is terrible.
I understand what you went through. My name is Olive Poole, descendant of pioneers in Tiverton. Is that what you want? And when war broke out, I decided to join the Navy. I had to wait quite a long time. And we were involved in this spotting business. Had to learn how to identify the planes and if you could only hear them.
Did you go away for training?
No, they brought it here.
They actually had a training camp here.
Air Force did all this and they brought the instructor. He was an older chap, I think, past the age of fighting, and he did all that. And then when you couldn't see them, you had to try and identify them by sound. My shift was 9 till 12 Sunday morning. I worked at the local post office store. And
where actually were you located? Where was the spotting
place? On a little hill about 16 feet above sea level. Over there behind the hotel. It's gone now, it's been flattened, but that was the highest point in the town.
And you were looking out over Westernport, were you, too?
No, we're looking everywhere. You didn't know which way. We were between Laverton and East Sale, which we got a lot of traffic. And one old chap was on one night, 9 till 12, and he had 30 aeroplanes. And after the first few, he said, they're coming every few minutes, and the girl said, well, there should be 30, so once you've got the 30, let me know. So he was quite happy then. But one lady used to take her dog over there with her. After the first couple of shifts, the dog used to bark when it could hear a plane and she couldn't even see it. So she just used to sit inside and then the dog would bark and... She was there when the bushfire came across.
My name is Arthur Johnson. I'm a cousin of Olive. And during at the start of the war, I was still going to school. We had the air spotting service where the Caltex garage is now, on a hill, as Olive said, and everyone was involved. I, being young, I always had an older person with me. But it was tedious, but I would say, but it was very interesting. You took your turn. I'm a bit tied up here because I'm trying to go back to a good few years now. I might get this a bit mucked up, but when Olive went through, about the bushfire, Miss Ross, who owned the hotel, had a bit of a menagerie, or a small zoo. She had a deer on the top of the hill. When the fire went through, it had died that day, or else it was burnt. I can remember that. And we lived over at Isles View, And the day the fire went through, it came from Clyde through the other side of the creek, just outside Turin. And we were involved in the fire, but not that fire. That burnt to the coast. We had... we heard later that just on the Melbourne side of the hotel, a chap pulled up to service his gas producer for the car. And the ash he put on the side of the road set a light to the grass. And he, just before he got out of the town, he found out the bag he'd put the charcoal out of was on fire on the back of his gas producer. So he hopped out and threw it in the grass, which means when it came up to Isles View, it came right from, we were encircled. Now, Mum and Dad were away at the time, and Gloria and Mavis and I were on our own. And we had, the house was run as a guest house at that stage. And there was an old chap working up at, in Delmore, who was boarding with us. And he, we, the girls rang him and got him to come home because we were terrified of the fire on the other side of the creek when it went through Mourne's. And to give us a fright, a police car said when came down Bayview Road and told us when the wind changed, we'd have to watch it coming over, the, jumping the creek. Well, it never jumped the creek. We had the fire lit for us. It was a very hot day. I remember when the fire came through, Harry Cuxon was fighting the fire up at Mourne's, and he came down, and the ferns were that high on either side of the road. When he got to our place, the grease in his bike was running out like oil. And his father, Pat Cuxon, he ran across the football ground as it closed in because he knew we were on our own. And him and I, he gave me a box of matches and we went and lit the grass so that it didn't come out of the scrub, and it was coming slower and it stopped the main thing, but it didn't stop the fire, it just made it easier to control. When we had another chap staying there and he was doing a panic, so we got him into one of the boats, and I wasn't very old but I could manage a boat. And as we were getting ready to leave, we remembered old Dubbo. He had a little hut in the, where the basketball court is now, in the rec reserve. And we got him out, and we were taking him up to put him on the boat to take him across the creek. And he ended up, he decided he wanted to go back. So we got him halfway to, and we had to go back and get him. I say we because it was a joint effort on everyone's part. One of the funny things, we had a pig in the pigsty, and Harry, being a strong bloke, he carried the pig up to the creek, away from the fire. I'd never seen anyone cuddle a pig before then. I took Mavis and Glory's hope chest, or whatever you like to call it, with me. And when I got over, as I left, Uncle Jim Kernett and Uncle Tom and two others, I think, came up the boat in a, up the creek in a boat to help. And as they walked, got out of the boat, they caught the caught the fire, and they stopped getting to the old wooden wing of the house. It I took the chap over in Dubbo, and I couldn't get much help, and I was keen to get back. So I don't know how I did it, because I was never very big. I rolled old Dubbo onto Uncle Tom's jetty and left him there. I couldn't get any help to get the glory boxes out, so there was Auntie May, Tom, and some others there, and I just turfed the boxes over and they salvaged them off the beach. I headed back, and that was my memories of the fire. I think I've finished, but if someone asks a question later, I might be able to add to it.
Oh, I was wondering about whether there were army detachments in this area.
Yes, there was a unit near. It was in, were built in the old hall just next to the hotel. They had one or two Bren gun carriers, and I can remember they had a slit trench out the front, they did their practice landing. They used to come up, sometimes the army would come up with inflatable boats, and they'd go down the creek. Apparently the mangroves were similar to what they'd have gone through if they were up in the islands. And I can remember they used to come down, they'd pump their boats up, and they'd take off from the end of the Bayview Road and go over and take the foreshore. It sounds funny now, but it was very interesting, and well, it let you know really you were involved. At Christmas time, Mum used to have the guests at the house, but before, we used to cook up a Christmas dinner or whatever for the boys and take that over before Mum put the next one on. So they were probably one of the better fed in the army, because they got their own rations plus what we had. We weren't affected much by the coupons, food coupons or clothing coupons, because we used to rare calves, and we had five cows. We used to rare calves for veal, or to replace the stock. And we'd send in a bacon pig to the Dandy factory, and they'd take half and smoke half. So with our own meat and plenty of milk and cream and butter, people used to, when they came there, they didn't need to give us ration tickets, which was a bonus for them. I think that's it for now.
George Duggan, I was. Now what?
And what area were you living in?
Interim, we were here. I was born at Kerry. Did a look olive. Mum was here at the time.
Were you going to the local primary school here?
Yes, but I've got a feeling I would have left. I must have been about 15 now. Old Mr. Dawson got special permission for me to spot the planes, because I wasn't old enough. And I used to go Saturday mornings from 9 till 12. It was quite good. It was, you sort of felt you were doing something. I remember Mrs. Hewitt used to come down and teach us how to roll bandages and how to wrap people up, and I'd go and I was their patient, you see. And she always said, you put the pillow slips on and you face the opening away from the door. And up till 10 years ago, I thought you did that so the draft wouldn't blow in the pillow and give you a cold in your shoulders. It was because it was looked tidy when you walked into the room. Oh, how stupid I was.
So, is this the Red Cross, the local Red
Cross? It must have been, yes. It must have been something for the war effort. And she used to come down and bandage, show you how to bandage, and we knitted socks and order scarves, I think.
What sort of socks?
Woolen long, long khaki socks. Yeah. For the army. I think we packed food parcels too.
And they'd be collected, would they?
I don't know what happened to them. I can't recollect now. I remember when that fire come through, where Arthur said, instead of me going over the bridge and coming down here to the water, I got on my bike and rode up to get in here and met it coming the other way. I remember Dad going mad when he came home telling me off. Why didn't I get into the water?
And any experiences while you were spotting the planes? Any interesting?
I can recollect. They asked, would we learn Morse code? But it ended before I had to get stuck into that.
And you were working at another job, were you?
No, I never went to work. I just stayed at home. Somebody come and married me. Then I worked.
You sure did.
The dancers were run for the what was it called? Comfort fund.
Yeah, the comfort fund. They were sort of every week or
that was to buy food, to make up food parcels to send to the army boys.
Yeah. I think Betty's mother taught us to dance.
Grandmother?
Was either you
Grandma
or
Pearl,
was it?
Mm. Yeah.
Teach
dance.
Yeah, we used to go over and learn to dance. And
what sort of music?
Oh, nice music we had, didn't we? Piano and a
saxophone
and
who played the music?
There was a woman's band, wasn't it? Mrs. Somebody.
Yeah, I can't remember the name.
Was Clark.
Was Clark, oh yeah.
Better memory than you thought of.
Yeah, and the big fat fella used to MC, Hamilton.
Frank
Hamilton, yeah.
Yes.
And how much would you raise at a dance?
It was probably only a few pound then.
Yes, it wasn't big money.
Euchre.
Yeah, they...
Did they play euchre? Because I
think they had euchre.
I can't play it now.
I think they had euchre tournaments those times. But you needed something like that to interest yourself, and because you didn't have television and...
No, it was... the radio.
We thought it was Christmas if we could go to the pictures and queue it up.
On the back of the sanitary truck, smelling like fennel, it did. Sitting on a box.
I remember people playing football in their work boots. They didn't have football boots. They just had a pair of work boots. And some put stops in and some didn't.
Did you have a local cricket team and those sorts of things?
We had a cricket team, but there was no football team until... I was about 17, so that makes it quite a long time ago.
Ted's father had something to do with it, didn't he?
Ted Carlisle Sr. was the first coach, and I'd never played football until I was 17, but we all enjoyed it. It was It was, I say, we didn't have television, so you had to make your own fun.
I think we did a better job of it than they do now.
When we got a bit older, we used to ride our bikes to cool you to the pictures. I lashed out one time. I decided to go up to Cooey and go with the boys to the football. Then I, when I got home, I realised I had to ride back to Turin to milk the cows. So that day, I rode to Cooey and back, and then after I'd done the cows, we went to the pictures. So I was up there twice. Another night, we didn't all have bikes, and I was to link my cousin up to Cooey, and a brother was to bring him back. But when they were leaving, one girl's bike decided it wasn't going to make the trip, so Harry had to dink her up, and I ended up dinking my cousin back again. And coming up the bunt,